Welcome to the Empowered Spirit Show. This is your host, Terry Ann Hyman. I'll explore the connection to the human spirit in a way that helps to navigate your life, including crisis. I am passionate about helping you to open up to your intuition and the metaphysical world of spirit to find your confidence and your own inner guidance. Take a pause, be inspired, learn ways to show up focused, centered, and more dynamic in your everyday life. Welcome back to the Empowered Spirit Show. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining me today. This episode is being brought to you by Forecast Salon, located in Homewood, Alabama. Forecast is a hair salon on a mission to shape a movement in the beauty industry, focusing on education, fashion, and creativity. Forecast strives to train stylists with the latest in education to provide their guests with the latest trends. Follow them on Instagram at Forecast Salon or find them online with their online store at ForecastSalon.com and check out their latest in stylist innovation at Club Forecast Salon on Instagram. As this podcast goes to air, we are in the eclipse portal of energy. We had the full moon lunar eclipse on Monday, and then we have the total new moon solar eclipse on April 8th. This eclipse portal of energy symbolizes the mysterious and profound aspects of attention and awareness, which has the ability to reveal or hide facts about you and the world, and it comes in to help you shape a new reality. Eclipses are often times of revelation as well as the burial of secrets and are reminiscent of the activity of the human psychological shadow. The shadow, we all have them, is what we literally sometimes push down, what we don't want to see or which we don't want to know to be true, but it is in fact a reality about ourselves. Sometimes these unwanted or simply unseen truths really kind of gnaw at the edges of our awareness like a light wind that suddenly gushes to rough up our hair or ripples around our skin as if to say, I'm here, hello. But like the wind, this truth is at once everywhere and yet nowhere to be seen. Yet there is a sensing. We do know something is beneath the surface. Even if we keep pushing it down, there are times like this, the eclipses, that push it forward, that help us to see and understand, that shines light on these shadows to awaken to a new path. There is a new earth brewing, and now is the time to move through this portal of energy and understand more about your soul and about the path you have chosen to live in. It's important during these next 2 weeks to notice what's going on for you. Notice what you're involved in. Notice how your emotions are, your spiritual practice, and notice what you keep telling yourself over and over. This is definitely an accelerated period of high vibration. You are being given a window into your higher life path. What does this mean for you? Are you ready to break free from the past? Eclipses are powerful teachers. They bring things to the surface so that they can be cleared away and something new can take root in your life. Do you need some guidance on how to make these changes, how to slow down, and how to bring the messages forward from your soul? I have a few opening spaces left for my private mentoring Empowered Spirit program, a program where I help you repattern and learn tools and techniques to break free and create a new path to empower your body, mind, emotions, and spirit. Schedule a spiritual makeover breakthrough call with me, and let's see what the number one thing is that you can do to break these old patterns. The link will be in the show notes. Today on the show, I have an amazing and very controversial subject. Well, not for me, but for the medical community. My guest is Alan Pierce. Alan and his wife, Beverly, are both investigative reporters who during COVID-19 started investigating and examining the disturbing and sometimes beautiful experiences of those who have survived comas. In their book, they explore the mysterious levels of consciousness this near-death experience unlocks. They also share proven alternatives to medically induced comas that are safer for treating critically ill patients and far kinder for the patients and their families. In this interview, we talk about near-death experiences, sleep, comas, consciousness, psychedelics, and the idea that our soul lives on and on and on. Before we begin, let's take a moment to pause and center and set an intention for yourself for moving through this eclipse portal of energy. So wherever you are, if you can, close your eyes. Taking a nice deep inhale, breathing up the body. And exhale, breathing all the way back down, slowing down. Inhale, breathing up the body. Exhale, breathing all the way back down, pulling all your energy into you. Grounding. Taking another deep inhale, breathing up the body. And as you exhale, call in your spirit. Feel the spiritual body lining right on top of the physical, the emotional, the mental bodies. Aligning. Taking another deep inhale. And exhale, dropping deep into your heart. Right in the very center of your heart, feel that connection. Your spirit and the greater spirit, source, creator, God. Know that you are loved, guided, protected. Feeling all this energy coming in around you. Taking a moment, noticing where you are on this great wheel of life. Here I am, we find ourselves in the direction of the east where the spring opens up, where the sun rises each and every day, where we set those new seeds for our path, our life. Calling into the east, the south, the west, and the north, above you, below you, right into the very center, deep into your heart, setting an intention for your path, for this new earth. Feel it, see it, know it, hear it. And allow the elevated emotions, how you want to feel, to radiate out all around you, setting this energy out through your aura. Taking another deep inhale and exhale all the way down. Feeling the heart opening. Feeling the awareness of your third eye. Grounding, centering. And as you're ready, blinking the eyes back open, coming back. My guest, Alan Pierce, is a journalist, broadcaster, former BBC correspondent, and author of several books. He has contributed to numerous publications from Time magazine to the Sunday Times of London. He lives in Nouvelle Aquitaine, France. He is here today to talk about his latest work, Coma and Near-Death Experience, The Beautiful, Disturbing, and Dangerous World of the Unconscious. So let us welcome Alan to the show. Welcome, Alan.
Hi, Terry. Thank you so much for having me today.
Yes, I am very excited to talk to you. What a book you've written. Just amazing. All the research you've put into and really the message that is opening up and to kind of go against the grain with the medical community. So congratulations on that, for sure.
Well, thank you. Yes, I'm waiting to get some feedback from the medical community. I was told more than once I was crazy to even begin this book.
Well, I can imagine because you are going through science and this whole idea of coma and near death. And, it is a big topic that many people don't talk about. People kind of just take it for granted. Yeah. Listen, okay, that's what they say to do. And I think as we'll get into it, COVID kind of just like we everybody listened, right? And now we're going like, well, what the heck did we do? But let's just take a moment and just pause because as we go to start, I know you've written other books, but what led you to writing this book now?
Well, it was actually during the very early days of COVID. And I'm a journalist, so I'm always asking questions, wondering how things work, for example. And I was watching the TV news, and yet more people were being placed into medically induced comas. And I just wanted to know, how does that help? How does that actually work? So I just thought I'd look into it, didn't have much else to do. And the standard medical explanation is that coma, it's an essential tool for critical care. It's the deepest, most restorative form of sleep, and it gives the patient the best chance possible. And that any events within coma, in fact, there shouldn't be any events within coma, it should all be a total blank. It turns out that none of this is true. I'm never one just to take, the first answer as the definitive answer. So I started to find coma survivors, and I found them initially on Facebook groups. And I sort of was allowed in, and I sat in the shadows, and I just watched what people were saying. And they were recounting events which, quite frankly, are journeys to other worlds. More often than not, they're using the medical terms that they've been given, as in, I hallucinated, I was delirious, I'm told I had false memories, but they seem rather real to me. So people are recounting all manner of events. Some cases they're reporting alternate lives that span decades, rich in every detail. People hold down jobs, they get married, they have kids, they go on vacation, they live a life much like ours. And then suddenly they get ill in that life and open their eyes and they're in this world. And they don't know who they are or where they are. They don't recognize the people in the room, for example. I was told by one survivor that she didn't even recognize humans. And the other thing that they were reporting was a range of ailments and a remarkable similar range of ailments, given that they'd been placed into comas for different reasons in the first place. So this just rang alarm bells. And it seemed to me, how come no one's been hearing these alarm bells until I came along? So suddenly I find that what the doctors are saying and what the coma survivors are telling me it's just totally at odds. And this needs exploration. So I began exploring.
Yes, I'm a longtime fan of Raymond Moody. I've heard him speak. I've listened to his books, his talks, everything. And also too, in my very early days, I had the great fortune of meeting Dr. Brian Weiss. He was instrumental in a lot of the work I do. And his work on what he would take his clients back through hypnosis, past life regression, was just incredible. And many of it's the same thing, like other lifetimes, and they go back to the places and families. And it's just remarkable what can come forward. So I love that you've actually taken this and placed it on the idea of comas. Let's go in there. Let's talk about it. And you also have a podcast on this, coma.podcast. That was fascinating. There was one beautiful and a couple of them that were pretty intense, very intense of other things that were happening. And it draws me crazy that the medical community doesn't realize this. Because I know in lots of times people will talk about even being put under that they're aware of what's going on in the operating room, but yet they're told, like you said, it's hallucinations or whatever. They're making it up. Yeah, definitely. Very interesting.
You see, this is the world we live in, where medical science will only concern itself with the physical, and these are the non-physical of this is the non-physical world, and it can't go there. So the only explanation they have is an hallucination, which frankly is connected with mental illness, and these people are not mentally ill. They're experiencing things in coma, which people are experiencing otherwise in life. The near-death experience, for example, features a lot within coma. But when people tell near-death experience stories, they tend to share really beautiful events. They don't tend to share really, really shockingly dark stories. When eventually I got coma survivors to open up and talk to me, they were telling me things that appeared to be a near-death experience, not as necessarily as Raymond Moody would categorize them, much, 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 much darker. And it leaves people so damaged when they come out the other end. The experiences they've been through are so real. And clear consciousness, this is really important, in absolute clear consciousness, the way we're experiencing life now. When they come out of these experiences, and doctors tell them that, I'm sorry, you've just hallucinated, you've been delirious, these are your false memories, get over it, snap out of it. It makes them crazy. And they've also coming out of this so physically damaged that they don't work, they're just in pain the whole time. Many people won't sleep or try hard not to sleep because they just don't want to be go back to the depths of hell again. And none of this is known. And the thing about critical care medicine, it's a conveyor belt of care where nobody's actually looking over their shoulder at the end product, that they're too busy dealing with the next patient. And people get moved down the line. And initially, you can't speak when you come out of a coma if you've been, had a tr you know, if you've had if you've been on a ventilator. There's been so much damage to vocal cords that people can't initially tell the doctors and nurses in ICU of their experience because they can't speak. They move down the line, and eventually, they're dealing with so many problems, physical and mental. Maybe they've forgotten language. Maybe they don't know how to use a knife and fork. They can't walk again. They have so much to concern themselves. Eventually, when they want to tell people of the experiences within coma, they're just dismissed. They're dismissed because people think, well, hold on a second. Until recently, you were drugged up to the eyeballs and beyond. You know, why am I going to take this seriously?
Crazy, right? Yeah. So a couple of things. Just made a few notes, but a couple of things. One, in that near-death experience, I recently had a guest on the show a few weeks ago, Rebecca Castle, and she went through a near-death like, and I had never thought that it had anything to do with anything, and it recalled a car accident I had been in. And I didn't even really put these two together until talking to her and even just reading through your book and realizing, wow, that did set up some energy for me that I was not aware of. And so I think it is really important that we do recognize whether it is death or not, that we can have these experiences that open us up. Now, I deal with a lot of people that come in and go, oh, I had this huge spiritual awakening. That's another thing that we can really allow ourselves to get into. And many times through coma or death-like, we do awaken to a more understanding. But the other thing that's even more controversial is even though they went through this and they have all these issues, their life is still there. But is that a good thing?
Well, many people have told me they wish they hadn't come back, particularly those that had the beautiful experiences, certainly not necessarily those who had the horrific ones, that they felt such peace, they'd never been so happy, and they come back and everything's wrong. Mentally, physically, they've had tens of points wiped off their IQ by the prolonged deep sedation caused by lack of sleep, bizarrely. That's pure sleep deprivation. They're in such a shocking mess. They really are. And there's no one there to help them. There's no one there to talk to. There's no one to share these experiences, light or dark. And only by chance do a handful, and I mean percentage-wise, a very small number of people find other coma survivors, often through Facebook groups, and they can get to talk to other people, and they find it wonderfully therapeutic, both to tell their stories and to hear other people's stories and just to share the pain. Because the medical community, science particularly, just don't want to know.
They don't. No. And I just think it's something that does need more awareness to it. And I know, like with Rebecca's story, when she found the near-death group, it really explained so much to her. She wasn't crazy. There was now a gift that she was bringing forward. And so instead of hiding, it allowed her to open up. And then in her sharing her story, I was able to look at more about my story too and recognizing when that happened to me, what were the events after that? And what has occurred since going through that? I just thought, oh, yeah, I know I didn't die, but I left the body. I definitely left the body. I checked everything out, everything that was going on, and then I was back into the car. I don't think I really ever jumped out of the car, but it felt like I did, right? And the bags were off and everything. In the meantime, I was about to teach a spiritual class, a Reiki class, and people were like, can I join? Can I come to the class? I ended up with a full class that same day, but I was definitely in an altered state all the way through. Right, just to get through. And it wasn't until I saw my car later totaled that I realized, like, whoa, I had no idea. But I was definitely in this altered state. And it was very profound. Yeah.
How do you begin to share this? You know, if you should tell a close loved one, you know, I was outside of my body, they're going to think, yeah, you banged your head, right? Like that is in its own right an explanation, where it is not. Within coma, the
Yes.
things people are experiencing are so spiritual. It's remarkable. If you can go back to the Egyptian Book of the Dead, thousands of years BCE, and see in there the things that people are seeing in coma today. Mystics and gurus and shamans, all sorts of people have tried to touch the world beyond this one. And the accounts that they bring back are the same accounts people are telling me in coma. This is why doctors will not accept, that this is what's happened. I mean, one day, we're finding that the near-death experience is now being generally accepted or moving towards general acceptance. Inside coma, people are having near-death experiences. One day, doctors are going to have to recognize the real death experience and the near-death experience. And then they're going to have to take a whole fresh look at the events within coma, because at the moment, their minds are shut.
And I do think there's something to be said about not having that follow-up and not being believed. Then it puts you in. And for me, it was right before COVID hit. And so then I went into an isolation, still living with this energy, knowing that I had a big message to share, but the world was shutting down. And so I didn't know what to do with that. I really didn't. I didn't know what to do with it. And it really created somewhat of a depression inside of me. And then I had attached it to the grief of the world, the grief of my mother, and all I could do was live in that grief. And it wasn't helping at all. And it really didn't make sense to me. And it took several years for me to open up and really recognize, wait a minute, this is important. This is really big. And this has changed the trajectory of my life. It really has, to really affirm that, yes, I am helping to wake up humanity, raise the consciousness. This work is important. Because I remember during COVID, like, oh, they don't need my work. Everybody just needs to, be able to survive. But I believe we do need spirituality in our lives, right? Separate from religion.
You're lucky to see it in those terms because not everybody does. Almost everyone who recounted to me a coma account, a story, told me they'd gone mad. They thought they were insane. They were crazy or bonkers, nuts. Every single one of them. And I was possibly, oh, I was in many cases, the very first person to take them seriously. And it took a long time for people to open up and talk to me about it. By gaining people's confidence over a period of months, people told me things that they hadn't told their closest loved ones. And for me, I mean, that's a wonderful thing. They found it a wonderful thing. But the majority of people, and we're talking of millions of people every year placed in medically induced comas, they don't know that it's spiritual. They haven't got anyone to turn to. They're just immediately dismissed. They're fobbed off by doctors who can't see the damage they're doing and don't understand where they're sending somebody when they send them down in the greatest depths of consciousness.
So it even sounds to me like some of your research is pointing out that it's almost better to have that near-death experience somewhere else because then you're not induced in that coma. Whereas the coma is really, like you're saying, the sleep deprivation and the not understanding is creating more harm.
Well, absolutely, it's creating a lot more harm. And there are in fact explanations for some of the events within coma. For example, if people are in the deepest form of meditation or they're experimenting with psychedelic drugs, it's been shown that a key element of the brain, the element that controls our conscious reality, the default mode network, is shut off. It's been demonstrated in coma that that network is also shut off. This leads to an expansion of consciousness, and it's indisputable. And there have been various scientific experiments involving the psychedelic compound DMT, for example. And what people are reporting in those controlled experiments are what people have been telling me inside coma. And it turns out that DMT, I won't even try to pronounce it, DMT is a naturally occurring psychedelic compound in humans, possibly all mammals, and that it appears to be released at key moments of stress, perceived death, and possibly the point of death. So it could well be that someone undergoing a near-death experience is in fact having a form of psychedelic trip, why nature, God, whoever, would give us such a wonderful gift? Is it to ease our passing, or is it to open a doorway to what lies beyond? Because so many of my coma survivors have touched that doorway and come back.
I am one that has done some of the ayahuasca and the psilocybin and gone down. In fact, after that experience, I didn't even just thought about this. After that experience I had about 6, 8 months later, I did go down to Costa Rica because I was in need of help. So mine was depression. Mine was like suppressing who I was. And I did go down to Costa Rica and I did have, you know, worked with the shaman, private work, and went on a couple of the ayahuasca journeys, right? And it's interesting. I saw things. I really did. But I'll tell you, the thing that was really more incredible was taking a trip down to Teotihuacan in Mexico, going back to sacred sites that my soul guided me to go to, and having that experience of, I've been here, my soul is calling. And that's when everything came together. I saw more, I experienced more, my soul knew more. So something was triggered inside of me as well. And it was no plant medicine at all. Go figure, right?
Well, maybe the plant's medicine had in fact helped open. It made it easier for you to see these things. I've spoken to a number of people that have done ayahuasca, as it were, in situ in the Amazon. And their accounts are all remarkably similar. They all appear to be going to another dimension. They're meeting intelligent entities. They're communicating with them. I don't know if you had that, Terry.
I had some sound experiences where sound was communicating with me. Now, I preface that saying, I know I'm a star people. I know I have some Lumerian traits to me. So some of it resonated with that. But there was something about the intensity of the sound kept coming into my heart. My mother showed up, which was very interesting because I had been grieving her. She showed up. She was drinking the tea with me. It was like, it was really quite amusing. And the visions were, but I still think that, like you said, like we have it in our brain during certain circumstances, open up to that. And I do think that we can do it either way. And so sometimes I do get a little annoyed with people that just want to do the drugs and that's how they go into their spiritual experiences. We don't need it. It may open you up originally. But I do think even in following up with coma patients and following up with people that have near-death experiences, and I know even just like talking to Rebecca, like she's come to me a couple of times, like we need to talk about this. We need to open up. Like I never heard her full story in some of the sessions we did until recently, but it's like, let's talk about it. Let's bring it forward. And I think sometimes like you've been doing with your book and allowing just to listen, right? Allowing the coma person to really talk about it is very healing in itself too. Yeah.
It's so important that people have got someone to talk to. And in every situation, be it bereavement, be it a terrible accident, be it anything, it's pure human nature. And it's human nature to want to know what happened to me just then. But what kind of question can you pose when you felt like you've been to the gates of hell or you stood on the steps of heaven? To tell someone that, they think you're nuts, you think you're nuts. But I know they're not nuts. I know they're actually going places for real.
Yeah, I agree with you on that too. I do. And again, going back to Dr. Brian Weiss's work and just studying everything I could. In fact, it was his book that helped me kind of come to terms with some of, you know, losing both of my parents. I know that we're spiritual beings and I know we meet up and I get more messages now probably than I did, you know, the last few years of their lives. But still, there was something that I just felt like going into that master energy and let's talk about consciousness and let's open up that can really help us to understand this better instead of just using, you know, medical terms and saying it doesn't exist. I don't think that's helpful, you know, and honestly, I see this a lot. People come to me in crisis because they can't get the answers they need from the medical. You know, they've been taking medications. It's not getting anywhere. They can't seem to get to the root of the problem, which is where I come in with soul work. Let's see where this shows up. Let's see where this has appeared in your lifetime throughout this lifetime. And then what happens is we go back into past lifetimes. Let's see where this comes forward as well. And to me, it's the most fascinating work I've done yet. Yeah.
I mean, past lives. When people recount various lives to me from coma, they're all set in the past. Not, it's always very distant, but sometimes quite distant. They have the ring of being a past life, as it were. Rich, as I said earlier, in every detail. And this, I don't know. I don't even know if there's a parallel for people experiencing an alternate life in real time, spanning decades, while just days or weeks pass in this world. I can find parallels for other things in coma, such as the near-death experience, for example. But alternate lives actually lived, rather than, say, having a past life regression where you're just remembering it in the way that I might remember my last vacation. These people are actually living it minute by minute. Have you ever come across any experience like that, ever?
Not to the extent that you're describing in your book, but I will say the work that I'm doing right now through Soul Work, it's a current program I'm teaching now, instead of just reading people's Akashic Records, I'm actually guiding them to read their own so that they feel it in their body. And some of the experiences that are coming forward are all these stories that within, 10 minutes, they're bringing forward that they feel, they embody it. They know this was part of it. And then the beautiful part is the healing that comes forward from really uncovering it. So I can't say that they're like, oh, I know I must have been in here for 3 years, right? It's not like that. It's more of like, 10, 20 minutes, 30 minutes of the meditation that I guide them through. But the fact that they're embodying the energy, I think, is a resonance there, because they actually can feel. The body remembers, right? The soul travels through many lifetimes. The brain doesn't keep it all inside of there, but the body can feel. And the body is what then, when we feel something in the body and there's like, yeah, that feels familiar, then we bring it in more and then we open up to what that experience is.
Which begs the whole question where a memory is stored. Doctors and scientists will say they're stored in the brain, but when they open up the head, they can't find any memories. They can't find consciousness. They can't find the mind. If they can't explain consciousness, our everyday waking level of consciousness, there is no way they can even begin to explain the depths of consciousness that people in coma are experiencing. So just to dismiss it as a hallucination, we might as well dismiss our consciousness now as an hallucination.
Yeah, it is. And there has to be an awakening for sure. I mean, I have worked in many phases of death. Right now, presently, what I do is prepare bodies for death. So I'm coming in at the end of the cycle, right? And so it's pretty soon after death. And so I could feel that presence and I could feel the hovering around. And many times I can even feel the rooms filling up. I don't talk about that a lot because I know a lot of the other women that come in to help me may not believe in that, but that's my experience. And in New York, I did help a lot of people transition through Reiki, through cancer. And so in those final moments, like right when everything just opens up and the body actually drops, or let's just say the soul releases from the body, it's an amazing moment. It really is. So I do believe, like you're saying in the book, like we don't hold it in the brain. We don't. And we don't just live in this, in one time lifetime. And I guess that's a personal choice to believe what you want to believe. But my experience has shown me many lifetimes. It really has. And then the beautiful thing that I like to do is bring the wisdom forward. Where has it shown up in another lifetime? And I've helped many people bring that wisdom forward to move forward in their life. That is what I love. When I can see that healing coming forward and they release the blocks that have kept them hanging on to not being able to do their purpose or serve humanity or do what they want. So that's kind of where I am coming from.
Why is it that we don't automatically have access to this knowledge, that you have to work so hard to access it?
Because we can't store it all in the brain, and because we have to tune in. You know what the key is?
But it's not stored in the brain. We know memories.
Right. I mean, but you know what the key is that we have to slow down. And this is a constant battle for most of my clients, even myself. I fight with it because we are a fast society. And now with all this 5G coming in, we are always trying to just keep going, keep going, keep going. And so for me, I know sometimes too, it's like, okay, Tara, just like shut down. We have to slow down so that we can receive those messages, so that we can tune in, right?
This is what we're told, isn't it? Live in the moment. We're all preoccupied with this nonsense. Our brains are just going high speed all day long. Yeah? No one's getting the peace that they need to be happy people.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. And I'm writing another book. I use tapping, emotional freedom technique, because it works on the amygdala of the brain. And it does lower stress, which means it brings us into present. And then when we're in present, that's where we start accessing this information. But that was the chapter I was writing about today. It's like people don't want to slow down. Like 5 minutes, really? Do you know how you can eat up 30 on your phone really fast, but then you'll argue you don't have time to meditate for 5, 10 minutes. But that is key. And that's why we don't access it. But yet the more you get into that slowing down, the more you ask the questions. And even like we did before we start, it's like aligning your energy, calling in the higher self, calling in, feeling that alignment. We're too busy.
You talked of helping people who are approaching death. You're obviously aware of the work with psychedelics towards that. When some people experience events within coma that really appear to be psychedelic, they also appear to be very spiritual. When they come back, if they come back, they've no fear of death anymore. They've no fear of death. They actually look forward to it, except I'm busy, I've got things to do, but I shall be looking forward to it. And I think as a way and means of aiding people who are terminal, I think psychedelics is definitely one path, but also understanding, just reading the experiences in the book can show you that there is so much more to life. We do not possibly die, cannot possibly die. We're energy. This is what we are. And it's the first law of thermodynamics. Energy cannot be created nor destroyed. So once we pass, where does that energy go? It goes somewhere.
Does go somewhere. And I've had one of my students question me. She so wants to know, like, where her soul originated from. And I haven't been able to find that answer.
No.
I mean, like, I don't know. I really, and I've been doing a little research and trying to figure it out, but I am not really getting any answers. I don't really know how much it really matters, but she's just curious, right? But it does open up.
Beyond saying the universe, I mean, there is no distinct answer, is there? You couldn't point to a map
There is no.
anyway, that's for sure.
Yeah. Definitely. So now that you've written this book, how has it changed your perception?
Oh, totally. Before I began this project, I just simply thought dead meant dead, full stop. I'm a journalist, as I mentioned. I've covered wars and conflicts, and I've seen a lot of dead bodies, and think, well, what happened was that someone very, very close to me died while I was halfway through researching this book. And I was distraught and upset, as anyone would be. But I also had this odd peace, and I instinctively knew that she hadn't died. As I was just saying about energy, she was a ball of energy. That energy didn't die, that energy went somewhere. And this hit me like a full scale revelation. I had flipped 100%. My entire outlook had changed. And it took the death of Rebecca to bring this home to me. And everything that had brought about this change within me is in the book. Now, I never set out to write a spiritual book. I was writing an investigation, or was investigating a highly dubious medical practice, but it has led me into the non-spiritual realms. And I've spoken to eyewitnesses the same way I would if I was on a newspaper or a TV show. I'm taking them at face value in many ways. And I trust these people. And these are not people that I've just met in the street. These are people I've got to know over a period of time. So I've learned through researching and writing this book that life goes on, that there's no two ways about it. So when Rebecca died, I was upset, but I had this incredible peace just knowing that she goes on, she'd do something else, or she'd be back again. Who can say?
Beautiful message and beautiful awakening and understanding to come forward, right? And just to really change that whole perception. And I do feel that this is a needed topic, especially in our medical community. And I think that advances in the medical community need to come forward. What is your hopes for that with the book? What do you think the medical community is going to say? It's pretty new out, right? I don't know if you've had a chance to get a lot of feedback.
No, it's very new. I mean, it's a bit like this. 150 years ago, doctors laughed at the notion that they should wash their hands, for example. Now, we'd be horrified by any doctor that failed to scrub up before delivering a baby or delving into a patient's chest. Well, people are going to think about coma at some point in the future that way. It's primitive. There is nothing in the medical literature advocating prolonged deep sedation and intensive care. Nothing. And yet everyone does it. They do it because this supervisor told them to. They do it because everyone has always done it for the last 50 years. They see no reason to change. If they think there's anything wrong with the patient, they think it's delirium and it's a little blip and it will pass. They do not get to see the physical and mental damage down the line because they are down the line and you're too concerned with today's patient.
I
Terrible.
agree. Yeah. You know, and even that reminded me of the last years of my mother's life when she would go in for some kind of procedure and they'd want to give her that cocktail. We would always have to say, wait a minute, like really low dose, because for days she was out of it. For days she was out of it. And it kept taking her down, down, down. Right.
They don't know where they're sending them. They actually haven't got a clue. They think they're sleeping. Here's the thing. You cannot sleep in a medically induced coma. Your brain is offline. It's a little bit like having a desktop computer, unplugging it and expecting it to work. It won't. The brain will not go through its circadian rhythms. It will not experience REM sleep. If it doesn't do that, a whole bunch of things happen. The first thing that happens is within 3 days of sleep deprivation, you start to lose your mind. A little bit longer than that, and you're into acute brain failure, and that's permanent.
Yeah.
And doctors don't know this. They just don't know this. They're not looking.
You would think that right there, just like that little nugget of information would be so awakening, because we do know how sleep affects us. Like I know last night I was up a little late. It's like, whoa, I didn't get my registered sleep in, right? A couple of days of that, and I know how I feel. And now they can measure sleep. Yeah.
But just patients in intensive care, they're disturbed hourly. They never get a full night's sleep ever.
Yeah.
And you could be in intensive care for weeks or months, and you are so sleep deprived. They're not in a coma, but they are in other realities.
Yeah.
Other
They're being
realities.
woken up. I've spent many a night with my mother in the hospital. Woken up, take your weight. Woken up, take your medicine. Woken up. And so there is no, it's not really, I mean, look, I don't want to bash the medical world, but it's not a healing place.
No,
It's
it's
really
not.
not. It perpetuates what's going on. And oh my gosh, I won't get started down that, but I have seen that. So it seems like even that nugget of information is so valuable for doctors to look at and understand.
The only doctors and nurses that appear to understand are those that have realized the errors of their ways, that they have actually inadvertently killed patients by using a standard medical procedure. And they are horrified and they are making amends. They are fighting the system to do that. They are in the minority. We talked of COVID earlier. Only good thing one can say about COVID in this instance is that it has brought the scale of this problem to some people's attention. So many people were placed into medically induced comas during COVID because they didn't know how to deal with them. They figured that was the best way. They also figured it would probably be cheaper and easier on the staff. It turns out not to be true in either case. They do not know. It's as simple as that. And they don't read the literature. I don't expect the people who buy my book necessarily to all read the literature at the end of the book. But it points to a vast archive of medical literature that doctors and nurses need know to help change the way they think, because they're just practicing medicine because they were told to practice it this way. And there's nothing to show that it's beneficial in any way to place somebody in a coma. None.
Yeah. And then unfortunately, it gets into the whole idea of big business. You know, they got to get their hours in. They got to get the patients in. They got to do all that to keep the dollar going. And then we lose what we need to do. Yeah, I so agree with it.
But if they actually woke up and saw the dangers of deep sedation, they'd actually see it's not cost effective to do that. It's costing a lot more down the line. And if you asked if there's going to be any change, if there is change in the future, it will be brought about by finances, people realizing that someone who's been placed in a medically induced coma spends far longer in the hospital system, costs a lot more money that way. And also, they're perhaps no longer the breadwinner anymore. And the whole dynamic changes in the family. It is not cost effective.
I deal with this all the time because the work I do isn't covered by insurance. But yet a lot of the work I do is going to help you be better in the long run, but yet it's not covered, right?
No,
And even stuff like massage and Reiki and like all of this, it's like, this would help us prolong our health and be better for us. So there is definitely a backwards thinking. I mean, this reminds me of the interview I did,
100%.
and I'll just refer everyone back to that a few years ago with Mark Gober about the end upside down thinking, right? Because this is not the way that we need to go forward. Yeah. So I applaud you for your book. I can only imagine some of the backlash that may come as the book is out there and people are reading it. Who is the book for? Who do you think you're going to find the first readers to be?
The first reason I really wouldn't like to say, statistically, the events within this book can happen to any one of us. Statistically, we're all likely to have at least one stay in intensive care unit. Quite often it's two or three. And so people need to know that they're being subjected to an unproven medical procedure that is proven to be lethal. So I'd like the general public to know this. I'd like doctors and nurses to understand the dangers of what they're doing. And I just think so many people need to wake up, but particularly people who've been through the experience, people who've lost loved ones in a coma, and people who've been in a coma themselves need to read this book. They have been fobbed off by the medical world who can't see the damage they're causing. And this book provides proper explanations of what they've been through.
Yeah, how reassuring for them, for sure. Yeah, definitely. So I do believe you have put your investigative skills to a fantastic purpose. So I thank you for that.
Thank
Because
you, sir.
again, I think we need more awakening to what our soul is here for and what we can work with and what we can remember and learn. Yeah, I do.
But this is on one level, it's a medical story. It's written for a general audience, but it's taken me, a journalist and my wife, who's a former private investigator, it's taken us to actually expose a scandal in the medical world because no doctor or scientist is even going to notice.
We need it. We need big shifts in our medical world. We really do. It hasn't changed that much. I know there's a lot of medical technology coming forward, but it needs to complete the whole system. It really does. It really needs to open up and have awareness to what our spirituality can teach us and have awareness of what the consciousness is all about and how we can really tune into this energy. I just think it's so important for who we are right now, you know.
But some of this is so basic. Talk to your patients, doctor. And they're not. They're passed down the line. Somebody else's problem.
Just going to let that sit right there for a moment. I definitely agree with that. And I know I've had my run-in with the medical community, and I'm not a fan of it. And I mean, I know we need it. Maybe I'll take that out of there. But last year I had to have some like surgery around my nasal. I'd gotten COVID and, deviated septum. And all they kept wanting to do was feed me more drugs. I kept saying, no, I'm doing Reiki because I was like coming out of surgery with my hands over my head. And I'm like, oh my God, you must be in pain. It's like, no, it's Reiki. And before I knew it, they like pumped me back up with more. And it wasn't even what I asked for. Right. So, yeah.
But there are many doctors and nurses, and I found a good number for the book, who don't think that way, who don't think, immediately go for the sedatives and the drugs and all the rest of it, that look for other causes and actually want to deal with patients as fellow human beings and not as sacks of potatoes in a bed.
It is starting to shift. It is. There's a great doctor, Dr. Lissa Rankin was on the show not too long ago, and she's been in there and she's really actually working with doctors to help them because of the burnout and starting to bring some of these practices forward. And we need more of that. We do. Because I'm not saying that we don't need our doctors. We do, but we need an integration in the body, mind, spirit, and emotions. We need all of it to come together. It's not just the physical ailments, right? We need to look at what's underneath it. Yeah.
There's too many pressures on doctors. I mean, time being one of them. Drugs representatives turning up at their surgery is another one. And there is a change. You're right. There is a change. And there's also a change just generally in the human world, in that people are opening up to spiritual possibilities, whereas they hadn't before. And that's definitely happening. And more doctors and people in the scientific world are slowly starting to see that there are other possibilities, and there's a lot more to explore that we can't measure, weigh, or see.
Yeah. I know that's with Reiki because there is a spiritual component. So they can't have the research like other modalities like the EFT I was talking about, because you can take a picture of the brain. But because there is a spiritual component, there's always a little bit of mystery. And so then it kind of gets pushed out or labeled woo or whatever. But it is a time of awakening. And I think, as you said earlier, people are searching more and more. People are in need of answers right now. Because there is a lot of turmoil in the world. There's a lot of loneliness. There's a lot of isolation that's still going on. And so people are starting to search. They do.
But just the generally accepted view that we live, we die, full stop, life has no meaning beyond that, it's miserable. It's just so miserable. And once we realize that's not the case, that there's so much more, and we're here to learn lessons, that's possibly a vitally important element here that is lost on so many
It
people.
is. Yeah. And you know what? The other thing is, too, it's not like we aren't allowed to grieve and feel that people do die and that we will miss them, because it is. That's part of human nature. But there is the other side of that, that once we can get through that and come to the other side of it, we will still be in contact with them and still feel their love and still receive messages from them. So I think there is a little balancing of both. Yeah.
Yeah, and every likelihood we're going to see them again.
Yeah. Yeah, and know in our hearts, like, wow, yeah.
Again, like the near-death experience, so many people within a coma met friends, relatives, who told them effectively, now is not your time, go back. We get this a lot in the near-death experience. This is people who had no notion what an NDE was telling me this, yeah?
Yeah. When I'm in that room preparing the bodies for death, I feel those that have come before me that have taught me this. I feel like everybody's right there. And it's like, okay, you know, and I can hear them say, all right, we're ready for her, you know. And so it's like, yeah. And I just have amusement with it. I don't doubt it. I don't judge it. I don't make up more than it needs to be. I just allow. And I think there is that opening that occurs if we stop judging, right? And stop having to look for the concrete evidence, but really listen to people and what they've been through. And I think that's really a vital part of all of this. Yeah, definitely.
It's all a learning curve, eh?
It is. And I am very glad that you have woken up to some of this understanding through the investigation, because it could have just turned in kind of black and white. But I think that you've had your own experience. Not that you have to go through a loss of someone to have that experience, but it did help heal you in some ways. It helped you understand.
The loss itself, what it did was show me that my mind had changed, that my outlook had changed. I hadn't actually stopped to figure that out. I would have done at some point, I dare say, but this brought it home in the most, I don't know, clear way imaginable.
Yeah,
Yeah,
beautiful.
I felt peace.
Beautiful.
I felt peace, and I know I'll see her again.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, what a beautiful conversation. I think we could go on and on. So, as we do go to close, where would you like me to send people to find your book?
Well, it's called Coma and Near Death Experience, The Beautiful, Disturbing, and Dangerous World of the Unconscious. Type in the first few words into your favorite search engine, go into your favorite bookstore. I'm told it's available wherever books are available. Also, there's an audio book, and it's been voiced by the most exquisitely voiced South African actress, Danny Painter. And to have her tell the stories, within this book, to tell our story, it's just a beautiful thing. And I highly recommend that. It's the most beautiful read. It's not a
Yeah.
hard read. It's a tour de force. It's a wonderful journey into other realms of reality.
Yeah, definitely. And a shout out to Inner Traditions. I think you can find it on their website as well. And then the podcast. Tell us about the podcast.
Well, the podcast, we wanted initially to have coma survivors tell us the stories directly for an audience. I think I mentioned this earlier, that it's not easy to have them tell a story. And many people who've told me a story have told me that story over a period of months, you know, a bit here, a bit there, and so on. And it's not ideal to have them tell a story in that way. So what we've done, we've collected their stories, as we have in the book. And in this instance, we've had a range of voice artists recount their stories for them, and they're just so beautiful. As you said, some are not so beautiful, but they're weird beyond belief. No script writer could ever come up with the things people are recounting from within coma. light or dark, to be honest. When they have beautiful things, they're not like anything. One person told me she was in hospital and Archangel Raphael came to see her, and they communicated telepathically, and that she was dying, but he built her a raft of autumn leaves and floated it on the ocean, and she floated it on this ocean for an eternity. Now, you can't make stuff like that up. And it's just so beautiful the way she tells it. So lovely. She has no fear of dying now. She knows where she's going.
Yeah, I think there is something to be said about sharing that story and opening up and the healing, even just from being able to, and maybe it wasn't their voice, but their story, and for them to hear it. I think it's awesome. And I think it just, offers more of an understanding for us to hear these stories as well. Definitely.
I mean, the book is full of people's stories. It's not a list of stories. They're all interwoven within a narrative, but it's stories of coma survivors and also the people trying to help them. It's a remarkable tale. It
Yeah,
really
that's
is.
awesome. So to round out, I do like to come back and ask this question. How do you feel that this work that you're doing through bringing this investigation to coma and talking to these patients can help to empower the spirit right now?
Oh, I think once we realize, as I realized, that my life doesn't end, let's say when I hit 86 or whatever happens to me in the future, it doesn't end. It goes on. I know it goes on. I'm convinced of it now. There's no way it can't. So, for the spirit, the book is enormously uplifting. I think I provided evidence of life after death in this book, assuming one accepts eyewitness accounts, and I do, and most journalists will. So, and I think if they stood up in a court of law and they told their stories, they'd be accepted too. So for me, this is evidence of life after death.
Yeah, which is empowering for the spirit to know we can continue on, learn our lessons, and grow without judgment. Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much for sharing your work and even just having the courage to bring it forward. I am very grateful. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll come back and let you know if I get pilloried for doing this. But I think it's going to help a lot of people. Terry, thank you so much for giving me the time today.
Yes, thank you to your spirit. Namaste. Thank you. Yes, our lives don't end. We are here to learn and grow. Consciousness continues on and on and on. It is uplifting for the spirit. Be sure to check out Alan's work, his book, Coma and Near-Death Experience, and share it with anyone you may know that has been in a coma, critical care unit, or has had a near-death experience. It is time to break these old ways. And reach out to Alan. He would love to hear your experiences as well. Thanks again for listening. This is your host, Tarianne Hyman. To your spirit, namaste. In the local area of Birmingham, come join me for my next Reiki 1 certification class at the Yoga Circle. You'll learn how to use Reiki to balance the body, mind, emotions, and spirit. It's definitely one of the most amazing self-care tools I have ever learned. The link to the class will be in the show notes.